Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talk to Kathy Kennedy, the Manager of Policy and Intergovernmental Relations at the City of Guelph, and Barbara Zwartzentruber, Executive Director of Strategy, Innovation, and Intergovernmental Services, also of the City of Guelph. They are two of the people behind the combined Guelph and Wellington County entry into the federal government's Smart Cities Challenge. Guelph and Wellington might receive $10 million if we win, which would be big news to our growing and influential agri-food sector. Blinding them with food science is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Do you compost? Well, good for you. Then you're part of the circular food economy. Well, you would be if the City of Guelph and County of Wellington, along with their partner, community organizations, and university researchers, weren't trying to invent it. Canada's first circular food economy is Guelph and Wellington County's pitch to Infrastructure Canada's Smart Cities Challenge, a pan-Canadian competition open to communities of all sizes, including municipalities, regional governments, and Indigenous communities. According to Infrastructure Canada's website, the challenge encourages communities to adopt a smart cities approach to improve the lives of their residents through innovation, data, and connected technology. For a municipality the size of Guelph, the prize is one of two $10 million grants to make our challenge a reality. That challenge is the aforementioned circular food economy, which has three different streams to it: the cultivation of nutritious food, to value food waste as a resource, and to create new circular collaborations, businesses, and jobs. In layman's terms, that means increasing access to affordable and nutritious local food, reducing or transforming food waste, and creating new food-related jobs. City of Guelph makes the point that the Royal City is ideally situated for this work, being home to 1,600 food-based businesses and entrepreneurs, 40 research centers, and a vibrant and engaged food community. And then there are all those farms throughout Wellington County shipping food into the city and also far beyond its borders. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, we do what we do best, which is explore city policy with the people who are crafting it. And today we talk to two members of the Intergovernmental Affairs staff that helped craft our Smart Cities Challenge proposal. And they are Kathy Kennedy and Barbara Zwartzentruber. With Kennedy and Zwartzentruber, we talk about the origins of the Smart Cities Challenge, the origins of Guelph's entry, the various aspects of the challenge, and what Guelph resources are out there to make it happen. We also talk about how everyone in Guelph can get involved with supporting the challenge, how the final prize will be decided, and why Guelph might proceed with the challenge even if we don't get that money. But we will probably get the money, so there's definitely some bragging rights to be had so far as Guelph is concerned, and you'll see what I mean when you get to the end of the podcast. So I caught up with Kathy Kennedy and Barbara Zwartzentruber earlier this week at City Hall.
So I'm Kathy Kennedy, Manager of Policy and Intergovernmental Relations at the City of Guelph.
And I'm Barb Zwartzentruber, the Executive Director of Strategy, Innovation, and Intergovernmental at Guelph.
Okay. Well, maybe to begin with, can you talk about your jobs a little? You know, Kathy, you know, I think you had the most straightforward job title, so we'll start with you.
So my job here is to really promote the City of Guelph with our federal and provincial counterparts. So whenever there's funding opportunities or advocacy purposes, then I'm out there selling Guelph. And this has been a unique project because we got to work with the County of Wellington as well for that purpose.
So it's like all the players.
All the players.
All
the players. And a lot of the job as well is about working across the departments. You know, whether it's in planning or engineering or environmental folks and economic development.
Mm-hmm. And Barbara, you had the more complicated job title.
It's really just a title that talks about the various streams of work that we have in the CAO's office. So My job is to help the city develop strategy. And right now we're working on the community plan. That's work that's going on in our area. Mm-hmm. And innovation. So projects like this, projects like the Civic Accelerator and the Guelph Lab, the those kinds of projects come out of our team's work.
Okay. To start with, I like to think of myself as someone who's pretty in tune with political goings on, but you know, I didn't hear of the Smart Cities Challenge until it first came to council. So, how did this come up? And you know, it not to be cynical, but it does seem like maybe the federal government is running a bit of a reality show for between the cities. But I understand the importance of some of the issues developing up. But you know, how did this all get started?
Yeah, I can understand that sentiment, but and we all in government after a while get a little cynical about these things, but it's actually quite ingenious of the federal government. So for a relatively small amount of prizes, I mean, the magnitude of them is big if you're a city and you actually win some of those prizes.
Right.
But what they've been able to do is catalyze the nation. So our colleagues in cities big and small across Canada have really stepped up to this challenge and are thinking like we have been about how do you apply technology to community-based problems. So oftentimes what happens is the technology folks, the entrepreneurs that are working in that area, the people that are thinking about things like big data and how do you do sensors and the Internet of Things,
right,
often aren't in the same room talking to the people who are trying to deal with community-based problems.
Right.
And what this challenge has done is we're seeing already really interesting ideas come from cities for a relatively small amount of money in a very short time frame about how those two worlds can work together. So I'm actually really impressed with what's happened through this challenge.
Two separate worlds we're talking about, because a lot of these technological innovations we're talking about, no one's thinking about governments.
That's
when they happen. You know, Facebook is a big example of that. And Facebook wasn't thinking about its role in politics when it was created. So it's a unique circumstance that a government is saying, you know, how does the technology affect us? And that's what your office is all about, is like, how can we use the technology too?
Yeah, and Kathy can tell you a bit of the history of the Smart City Challenge, but I'll just say that what we're seeing now is a real growing trend towards civic. What people talk about is civic technology.
Mm-hmm.
Some people talk about it as tech for good. So it's how do you apply technology to problems that government is trying to deal with, whether they're social problems, policy problems, service delivery problems.
Mm-hmm.
And folks in the tech sector read a great article about Silicon Valley folks who, you know, made their money and now are thinking, well, how can I make the world a better place?
Yeah.
And even though, you know, Facebook folks started out with that, we can see the issues if we don't have government and the private sector and the technology sector working together to deliver social networks, community-based platforms where people can come together.
Mm-hmm. So about that history, you know, in terms of where the challenge comes from, and how the city decided to respond. You know, it sounds pretty open-ended in terms of letting cities decide for themselves, because obviously each city's strength is different. But how and when did Guelph decide to get involved?
So the federal government program was actually modeled from a program that came out of the United States, but it was through the Department of Transportation. So the Department of Transportation in the U.S. had said, we need to find a better way to solve social problems. And so that the winner in that case was a city in Ohio that identified that they wanted better transportation to assist with mobility issues in disadvantaged communities. So that's how the federal government sort of gave rise to this. And then they had a couple of workshops with municipalities to say, you know, this is what we're thinking of. What do you think? How is it going to work? And it really gained momentum. In the city of Guelph specifically, it became pretty apparent pretty quickly that food was our was our place. Mm-hmm. We're known for the university, research, etc. And with the work that we're doing at the city and with our community partners in terms of green tech and clean tech, we knew that there was a space between food and green tech and clean tech and doing the right thing mm-hmm. for our society. So it made a lot of sense for us to work with our community partners through the seed, through public health, etc., to find a challenge that would meet the needs not only socially but environmentally and economically as well.
Mm-hmm. When you watch the news, if you watch the news often enough, you know there's a food issue that the experts are going to call are at the top of the hill. So at what point do you start looking at the partnerships? You know, were they, you know, the university, public health, or were they all part of the discussion at the very beginning, or
immediate? We knew that this is as much as it's a city county conversation at a political level. We knew that without those partners, we wouldn't have the story to tell. We need to hear from them about what do they think we should be identifying and saying and asking for. Mm-hmm. Part of what's interesting about this challenge, as Barb indicated, it's so unique and so innovative, is that a good chunk of the application and the criteria for evaluating it relates to the challenge statement. So that challenge statement that we came up with took a lot of time and a lot of massaging and recognizing that it was an important story to tell. Mm-hmm. So the challenge statement gives rise to the rest of the story in terms of the projects and the vision and the principles and that sort of thing. And we really evolved that story because we learned through, we sort of thought we'd had a challenge statement, and then the more we talked to folks and the more we learned about what the strengths were already, but what the gaps were as well, we were able to refine our challenge statement to what it is now.
Okay. When did the county come in to be a part of this?
Almost immediately as well.
Yeah, okay. And we, if you're talking about food, the food production and distribution system, you have to think county, right?
Yeah.
Wellington County is a tremendous producer of food products that go both into Guelph, but the majority of it goes around the world. So we knew that to really think about a sustainable food ecosystem, a city can't think of itself as an island, has to think about the surrounding farmland and the work that's going on there.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the actual proposal itself. I sadly did not write down what the actual terminology is used, but it's about how food is produced, how it's available. Oh, we have the challenge statement right here.
I do.
Let's read the challenge statement. Guelph Wellington will become Canada's first technology-enabled circular food economy. Let's start with that. Can you say what a circular food economy is?
Sure. We both can talk about that. It's Our current food production system is based on a linear model, in that we take what we need from the earth, we make something, but then we dispose of quite a bit of things. And a circular model is really changing the vision for that, so that you take and you produce, but you also replenish and you address issues related to the waste, so that things become all part of the value chain, and you reduce the waste and you increase the ability for everybody to share in the outcomes, both economic and access to food.
In reading that, that was one of the sort of sub goals of the challenge, food waste on resource, or food waste as resource, I should say. And I read that and I was like, how is that different than what we do now with compost? Are we talking about is just what we do with our compost a small part, or is there a bigger thing we're overlooking in terms of how we dispose of waste?
That's a great question, and Barb and I, over the last couple of months since we've been in this, it's quite interesting to know how our mind expands to how much waste there is and how much more can be done. Mm-hmm. So one of the examples of the partners that we dealt with uses soldier flies. So the flies can actually make product out of the larvae make product out of the waste, out of compost, for example,
right.
that would go into pellets that can go into food stock. So it's finding those really innovative approaches, which is why the technology aspect is so important. How can we ensure that we use every aspect of that waste for different means in different ways? And one of the examples that we talked about when we were briefing the MPP Sandals and MP Longfield is that, you know, we think about that a lot in the biodiesel world, right, of using corn, etc. But there's so much more that we can do. So it's learning all those technologies that make that happen.
Okay. Are these technologies that are available now, or is this also partially helping to facilitate new technologies?
I think it's both. I think it's learning how to apply what. So there's a food revolution, and that we're thinking about food quite differently.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that's driven by a technology revolution. So big data now can help us understand data related to the health of citizens, combined with data related to access to affordable, nutritious food, combined with data related to behavior. So when you go to the grocery store, what do you buy? And how you think about food. So that kind of the technology, the application of those new technologies is tremendous. Another one of the partners that we are working with has climate controlled farms that are essentially in like a train car or a tractor, the back of a tractor trailer,
okay.
all controlled by data. So soilless growth of greens, controlled by a smartphone. So it's kind of wild and crazy, but it means that you can get fresh produce into neighborhoods who maybe don't have access to a grocery store at affordable prices where they can get that. So
right. And that plays into the other line here about reimagining an inclusive food secure ecosystem that increases access to affordable nutritious food by 50%. Because I imagine that's where the county comes into play as well. There are a lot of people of limited means who live in places where there isn't public transit, and going to the grocery store and buying, you know, meat and vegetables and having to carry that home is prohibitive from just a physical sense.
Yes. So it's also about reducing our, what we're really excited about, and I think the county is too, is about how do you shorten that supply chain and increase the relationship between local producers and consumers in cities and in towns.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you enable people to get access to that nutritious food in an affordable way in their neighborhoods? So farm markets are the start of that, but I think urban agriculture is going to grow, and the opportunities for people to get access to that close at home are going to increase.
Okay. It also talks about creating 50 new circular businesses and collaborations, and circular economic revenues are increased by 50%. Are we talking about the city going into business?
No.
When it comes to this?
No. No. unless we have bake sales. No. It's about promoting new business options.
Okay.
And part of it also is about educating and giving a food awareness campaign. You know, we don't know what a lot of the waste of food is, or what it can be done with it differently.
Okay.
We learned through this process that you know, the highest degree of health in quinoa is in leaves and stems. Well, most of the time you just eat the quinoa. So how do we how do we teach people? How do we find different ways that they can use the food in a healthy way? And so part of that food awareness is in there, but it's really about creating opportunities, having a space where, as our deputy CAO has referenced, where people from around the world know that Guelph is where you come to innovate your food products.
Mm-hmm.
So where can we develop that? Where can we enhance that? How can we better partner to learn new ways of collaboration in the food world?
Okay.
I'll just add to that. There's studies that talk about $31 billion worth of food waste in Canada. And to me, that's $31 billion of opportunities for new businesses in terms of finding value, whether you're turning that food waste into a new product or a new use, or whether using it for energy. So our organics folks are already offering carbon offset credits in the voluntary market, and using that opportunity to develop new models around how you make those carbon credits even more circular, and they have an opportunity to incent the local economy further. So that creating new circular businesses and jobs, we want to talk about having a an approach here, collision spaces where people working in clean tech and agri-food and technology can come together to solve food problems. And we'll use our civic accelerator model where we can put out challenges and teams of collaborators can come together, and then bringing the right funders around the table for prizes and funding of startups that, for folks that are working on those kind of food-based problems is also part of that. Part of the overall challenge and vision.
Okay. You guys have gone into a lot of detail, but I'm wondering, how much detail do they need for the challenge? Like, you guys have gone seriously wonkish on this. I gather you are probably not experts on, like, food security and you know, the food economy before this. So, you know, how much detail were they looking for the Smart City Challenge?
They were looking for quite a bit of detail, but we had very limited words.
Right.
So they were very, very selective in saying, tell your story in a really simple way. So
okay.
For example, when we talk about the challenge statement, we had a total of 50 words. That was it, that you could identify. So that came, that's where a lot of the massaging and the work came from, to making sure that we could clearly articulate. For the challenge statement, we had to identify some of our goals, the principles, some of the projects that we anticipate. But it was a really very concise portion for the federal government to evaluate. And from that, there'll be 10 finalists in our population category that will get $250,000 to expand the business case beyond.
Okay.
So by the end of the summer, and I'm guessing probably September is summer, we'll find out whether we're one of the finalists, and then we'll be needing to expand the business case a little more with perhaps more of the details about how would the technology be used exactly, for example. But we don't know what the criteria is for the next stage yet.
Okay. So this isn't the final submission. Is that
no.
This isn't the final exam, to borrow a phrase. So you had to be very specific, but brief.
We had to be specific, brief, but aspirational.
Right.
Bold.
So really bold and innovative. And so that made for quite an interesting kind of dichotomy. You have to balance about, you have to be specific, you have to say, we can do something with this money. We have the bandwidth behind us to make this a success. Equally, recognizing that, but we've got a lot of gaps that we don't know the answers to yet. And so a lot of that, the work that we've done and the projects that we have identified, as Barb had alluded to, is about the mapping and figuring out where do we have gaps in this community, and where do we have gaps in terms of understanding what we don't have versus what we need.
And is that where the $250,000 comes into play? Is that it's kind of like seed money to see where that we do have the resources, or to see what we need in order to fulfill maybe what we need if we get all 10 million?
Yeah, the 250 million is $250,000 is meant to help communities really develop their specific projects and get the partners around the table, develop them further so that they're ready to execute when they get the final prize. But I just want to say that we have become kind of wonkish in this area. Food's not our area of specialty, but this is really about amplifying what the community's already been working on. And they are really passionate about this. And whether there was a smart city challenge or not, the smart city challenge kind of catalyzed people, gave folks a spark of where they could go next. But the people in the community, from the seed to the public health to the community health center to the university, mm-hmm. they've all said, this is the vision for where we need to go in Guelph, no matter what happens. And the Smart City Challenge is going to help us get there a little bit more quickly and easily, but we really need this to happen no matter what.
Okay.
And it's also about, from a city point of view, it's about also amplifying the role that Guelph plays on the innovation corridor.
Right.
So the Kitchener to Toronto corridor, people have talked quite a bit about that, the kind of innovation that's happening in high tech in Waterloo, and the stuff that's happening in Toronto around fintech and AI and so on. We sit at the heart of that corridor, and our contribution is really about the agri-food industry, advanced manufacturing, and clean tech, things that matter to people's quality of life.
Sure.
So that's why this challenge really sparked the opportunity for us to just move things forward a little bit in a coordinated way, a little bit more quickly.
That begs the question then, what happens if we aren't one of the lucky ones and we don't get the $10 million? That, you know, what happens to all this work? I mean, I imagine to a degree of it, the university's doing it anyway because it's part of their research and academic work. But, you know, you just said, this is important work that has to be done regardless of the Smart Cities Challenge.
Yeah, I think the partners are keen to move it forward. We're hoping, and I think, you know, we both have taken a quick look at what other city challenges are out there over the weekend. We think we've got a great one, and we imagine we're going to be successful. But should we not be, there are other opportunities, I think, that the partners are going to want to pursue to keep this work moving forward.
Mm-hmm. You want to trash talk the other challenges a little?
No.
But can anybody else say they're right in the heart of the innovation program? We have the university at our side and the county.
Yeah.
Not sure that was the type of trash talk I was thinking.
That's as nasty as we can get.
Fair enough. Can you talk about who's doing the judging and how this is going to be judged?
Sure.
You know, you we're pretty boldly sitting here saying we've got a decent shot, but who's going to make the final call?
Yeah, it's an independent jury that has been selected by the federal government. From looking at it, so it's not political.
Mm-hmm.
They're independent. They had to apply and indicate for whatever criteria they were looking for. And they're from across the country.
Okay.
So there's representation, I believe, from almost every corner of the country to ensure that there wasn't any preferential treatment left for provinces. So,
okay.
Again, I think the federal government have done a really good job at finding a way that this can be successful and that they can say, you know, we are solving social problems with technological solutions. And I think the point about it being embedded in municipalities is a really important one, because communities have been doing this forever.
Mm-hmm.
Municipalities and governments in generally are known in the tech world to be a little bit behind. So this is forcing partnerships that I think have been needed for a long time, but we just weren't quite sure how to do it. Guelph is an advantage because we have the Civic Accelerator program, so we were able to embed technology and to solve wicked problems. This is just catalyzing that.
Okay. So we don't luck out and Lloyd is one of the jurors.
No, there's no political parties at all. And they're identified, the jury members are identified with their bios and everything online. So it's a very transparent process.
Okay. Let's dream a little and say we do luck out with the $10 million. What are the first steps?
Well, the first steps are going to be creating a governance structure, so figuring out how the partners are all going to work together, how we're getting the projects outlined and off the ground. And then a big part of this is the federal government's trying to move to an outcome-based funding model, and mm-hmm. they're saying this is their first kind of foray into that. So they're very keen on measurement and tracking. So that will be a big part of the work as well. So we'll need to get all of the pieces. It's a huge project, and it will need to be properly supported by all the partners and resourced.
Outcome-based funding model, meaning we have to see how we're going to get out the money we put in.
No, outcome-based, it means instead of... outcome-based means that you focus on tracking the actual outcome. So what did I get for the money I invested?
All right.
It's government has traditionally in the past funded process as opposed to outcomes.
Okay.
And the federal government is very much trying to say, well, we're not going to watch over your shoulder all the way along and burden you with processes and so on, but we are going to manage to outcome. So if you're not, if we're not getting what you committed to through this process, that's where the rubber hits the road.
Okay.
So it's a pretty forward-looking approach. It's one that's used by the private sector quite a bit, and it's really about making change and tracking the changes that come from the investment.
Right, and I think that one makes this different, because I think some, again, the cynical among us may look at this as like pie in the sky, kumbaya, we're all working together to create a better future, but what we're hearing is that the government's very focused on, like, this isn't just about aspirations, this is about actual deliverables, and so having to play to a municipality's strengths in terms of what we have already and how we build on that is the key here.
Yes, that's really fair. And in the application itself, we had to identify some of our projects. So, you know, we had to be very forward-thinking and innovative, but practical to say, these are some projects that we would like to see happen if we got the money that are really important to develop that food community of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very selective in our words of food community of the future, or circular food economy, because as Barb had mentioned, the circular economy is catching on elsewhere,
right?
But it's about food in a different way and seeing food in a different way.
So we couldn't just say, like, well, it's going to invent a flying car.
No.
Or something like that. Is there a way that people can... I guess maybe even if they are not in the food economy, you know, the layperson, is there any way that they can get involved? Is, you know, even if it's just promoting?
Yep. So our website's up and live, and we're asking people to give us their great ideas about how we achieve these goals.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to be an expert.
Mm-hmm.
And diversity is really a diversity of thinking and diversity of experience is what we need here, and practicality. So we're really looking forward to hearing from citizens the kinds of things that they think they could do or that we should think about in terms of the projects and the opportunities to hit these goals that we have laid out here.
Okay.
And check the website often, because we have a plan for a communications rollout throughout the summer that will talk more about how things are going, some video clips with some of our partners and experts. So we're looking forward to a really interesting summer and an engaging summer, and hearing what people are thinking and taking some of those ideas as we move forward.
And the website is where?
On the Guelph.ca.
Mm-hmm.
And food innovation, and they've got links to all the work that we're doing so far.
Okay, so guelph.ca/innovation. Food innovation. Guelph.ca/food innovation. It took us three times. Well, Kathy and Barbara, thank you so much for your time today, and we'll look forward to seeing the results. because we're going to trash everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And once again, that was Kathy Kennedy, the Manager of Policy and Intergovernmental Relations at the City of Guelph, and her colleague, Barbara Swartzentruber, Executive Director of Strategy, Innovation, and Intergovernmental Services. And you can learn more about Guelph Wellington's entry into the Smart Cities Challenge at guelph.ca/food innovation. The finalists will be announced later this year, and the winner will be announced in the spring of 2019. And that's it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph, and you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly, and until then, see you next time.